this business before.
Have you?
Yeah, about George and his trouble. He tries to do too much, doesn't he?
Yes.
He ain't no baby, you know. I mean, what, are you 70-something, 71, are you, George?
I should be 72 next birthday in the spring.
Well, then you're 71, 72 next birthday. Mm-hmm. Well, considering what you went through last year, I should have thought you'd have been only too glad to take it easy.
Who are your friends?
Hey?
Who are you?
Oh, sorry. My name's old Wilmot. George Wilmot.
George
Wilmot? Yeah.
I've been
around here several times listening to conversations and I thought perhaps one day I might get a look in, you know. Never know your luck. But that Dr. Marshall fella, he's a real gent, you know, really is. He knows his onions, does that man?
Of course he does.
Yes.
He certainly knows his onions, all right.
Mr. Wilmot, can you tell us, you know, about yourself?
I was a rag and bone merchant.
Oh,
yeah, you know, I used to go around the houses collecting up whatever they got, you know, make a little bit on it. Yeah, I sort of eked out an existence, I suppose you could call it a living. Occasionally I'd have a good day and I'd get something really good, worthwhile, and get a fiver for it probably, you know.
Yeah.
But I never was that lucky as some of them reckon they are. Of course, a lot of that's talk. I mean, anyway, I'm quite happy to be out of your world. I had enough on it one way and another. I had a pretty rough time taking it by and large.
Mm-hmm.
Although in my own way I enjoyed myself. I had a bit of fun at times. I had two wives, neither of them any bloody good. Still, perhaps it's as much me as them, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
But I was unlucky, I suppose.
Mr. Wilmot, how did you pass over? What happened?
Oh, I caught pneumonia. One bad winter, going around, you know.
Yeah.
Got a bit of a cough and chest trouble started up. And before I knew, I was in the local hospital, you know. One there more than about, about a week. It was too far gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always had a bit of a cough and then my chest was always a bit of a weak.
And
bit, you know. But, oh dear. You know, I may make you laugh, but it's perfectly true. Mind you, I was always fond of people. I always took an interest in people.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I think I can say this with honesty, that often people will come and ask me proper questions if they're in trouble. I was always glad to help people, very fond of people. But the odd thing was, and in a way I'm not surprised, because I was so fond of her, but my old Jenny was the one that I first saw when I come in.
Oh,
yeah. Nah, that's got you guessing. But Jenny wasn't neither of my wives, thank God. It was my horse.
Oh,
yeah. Old Jenny, she used to pull my cart when in my earlier years, in her 30s, you know. I was real upset when poor old Jenny collapsed and died, you know. She was as near to me as any woman could be. In fact, more so, I had great affection and regard for old Jenny, and she knew everything that I ever said to her. I'm sure she did. She was as cute as they come. She was a real beaut. She wasn't much to look at, I suppose, as horses go, of course, but she was a real nice old nag, she was. And the first thing I remember when I woke up over here was being in a field. I seemed to be sitting lying under a tree, and I remember sort of waking up, and I could see this horse coming towards me. And there was my old Jenny. Girl, she looked younger, of course, and she was so thrilled and so happy. You could sense and feel it. I can't say how. I mean, this is something I can't explain. But it's almost as if she was talking to me. It was extraordinary. I couldn't hear any voice, and you don't expect to hear a horse speak. But it was somehow mentally, I suppose, now I realise, it must have been as if she was speaking to me and welcoming me. She came and stood beside me and was licking my face. Goodness me, I never forget this as long as I live. And I was so thrilled, so excited. And I was patting her and fussing her. And it was as if I heard a voice behind me. And I turned round, and there was a fine-looking chap. I think he was about 6'2", tall, fair-haired, young, and he was such a nice fella. And he says, "I've come to look after you." So I says, "Come look after me, what are you talking about?" You know, I sort of said, taken back, what with Jenny and the rest of it. He says, "Yeah, I'm going to look after you." He says, "I've been in charge of you." I said, "What do you mean in charge of me? I've always kept looking after myself, always had to anyway." He says, "No, you don't understand." He says, "You know you're dead." Because for the moment it struck me like a thunderbolt, you know. And it suddenly came to me, of course, Jenny had been dead some years and I'd had another old nag after her, you see. Nice horse, but never to me like Jenny. So he says, "Is your dead?" And I thought, well, I don't know what to make of this lot. Then it seemed as if he was able to show me something. I don't know whether he showed it to me, I suppose he did. But I could see myself lying in a bed, stiff and stark, you know. And it's as if, well, it was as if I was looking at my own body, and yet I wasn't there, and yet I was there. And I saw them put this body on a trolley, take it out of the bed, put it on a trolley, and wheel it away. And I was walking behind this body being wheeled out, and then it all disappeared. And I was back where I was with this boat, and I found out afterwards his name was Michael. So I said, he said, "My name is Michael." So I said, "Oh, yes." So he says, "Julie and I should dead." So I said, "Well, I don't know what to think." He says, "We just had that realization, didn't you, that vision light of your body light." He says, "You know, you died in that hospital." So I said, "Well, I recollect now I was very ill in hospital. But if this, how can I be dead when I'm here and I'm talking to you and I've got Jenny?" He says, "Well, isn't Jenny in itself some evidence to you you're dead?" So I said, "Well, it seems very strange." But then again, he said, I said, "If I'm in heaven, if that's it," I said, "you know, it's better to find horses then." He said, I said, "They ain't got no souls, are they?" So he said, "Ah, that's what they tell you on the earth." He says that they ain't got no sort of other life, only just a whole material life, as you call it, like, you know. So he says that horse, because of its nearness to you and the love and affection you've showered on it, has given it something which helps it to extend, as he put it, its lifespan. I didn't quite get all this luck, you know, expended lifespan or this. He said, "But while you have love and affection and regard for that horse will have an existence." He says, "Human beings don't know their responsibility," he says, "to animals." He says, "Ever since I've been here, which is hundreds of years," because I looked at him and he said that, I thought, well, this is a bit much, you know, looking so young and spruce and nice, looking hundreds of years. I thought, but anyway, I thought, well, don't do to interrupt these gentlemen, like, you know, after all, I felt a bit lost, and I thought I had to mind my Q's and P's, you know. So he says, "Oh," he says, "time is nothing, you see." So I said, "Heavenly, you know, it's nothing, mate, you know." So he says, "I've been here for hundreds of years," he says, "and part of my responsibility and my job," as he put it, "is to see and care for animals." He says, "I often go down into the pits." I wonder what the hell he meant when he said pits. I thought he meant in hell or something. So he says, "No," he says, "pits, where they have the animals down in the mines." He says, "I tend to them and try to help them," but he says, "there's not a great deal you can do." He says, "A lot of them are very badly treated, you know." He says, "Over here we have great plains," that's what he put it like, "of places where animals congregate and where there's love and affection and they can be cared for." He says, "People have this stupid idea," he says, "that because they're human beings, they're the only ones that have got any right to a future existence, should there be one," because a lot of people on earth, he says, "don't believe there is one." He says, "Then you get the religious ones who think there must be and there is, but they haven't got much of a conception of it either." Of course, he was talking a lot of stuff here, you know, and I was getting very intrigued, and I thought, well, all the time he was talking, I was half listening, half thinking about myself, what I was going to do, you know, being dead and all the rest of it. It was as if he was illustrating things, and I was trying to take it in. At the same time, I couldn't stop thinking about myself and my own worries. Anyway, he says, "You don't want to sit here," he says, "let's walk." So I says, "All right." So I thought, well, this seems so odd. Anyway, I walked beside him. We walked through this field into what appeared to be a sort of road through a little gate. It was just, honestly, it was just as if he was in the country on earth, you know. Mm-hmm. And as I was walking along, the horse followed me. I thought, well, I don't know, it seems so strange, this horse following me. Yeah, I was so fond of it, and there was no doubt about it. It was the same horse that I'd had before. But anyway, I thought, well, don't do the worry too much, you know. I never was really the worrying kind. So I walked beside him, and we walked and walked, so it seemed to me, and everything was so pretty and beautiful. There were flowers growing by the wayside, and there was this very attractive sort of road, not very wide, very narrow, really. I suppose you could have got a horse and cart along there, it's about all. Been jumped for two to part, one to pass another. Anyway, we walked into this country place and past little houses, and I could see people sometimes standing at the door, and sometimes they'd be looking out the window, and they all seemed so bright and yet very normal, very natural. Sometimes they would wave, and sometimes people would call out, and they all seemed to be white people. I didn't see any coloured people, and I thought to myself, this must be, if it's what he says it is, heaven and that, it must be a white people's heaven. I started thinking about coloured people. I don't know why I was thinking about coloured people. I thought, well, I don't know, they all seemed to be quite normal and natural here, but I didn't see any other people, only white people. So I wondered to myself, because I didn't say anything to him, but he must have been able to read my thoughts. Ah, he says, you wonder why it is that these people are all white people. So he says, all coloured people too, all races, all nations. But he said, of course, it's natural. He says that people want to live in a community or a condition of life which is best suited to them. I mean, they like, perhaps a person likes a little cottage, and they're quite happy to live in that way, and they have that, whereas perhaps a coloured person, depending on his experience of life and so on, wouldn't be happy in what you would call a white man's sort of atmosphere. Anyway, he says, you'll find there are people of all nations, all types here. And he says they live in a community or condition of life, he says, that's best suited to them, to which they'd be most happy. But gradually, he says, they change their thoughts and their outlooks, whether it's white or coloured. He says, and they then find communities where they're into whatever it is, get together, you know. So I thought, I don't know, this bloke seems to know all the answers. He seems to even read my thoughts, so I have to be careful what I think. He said, he looked at me as I was thinking this, and he smiled. He says, you don't have to think like that. He says, just be yourself. I quite understand whatever your thoughts are. I thought, well, I don't know, he's a nice fella, but you had to be, you know, careful here. But he seemed very humorous, which struck me as odd, because I always thought religious people would be very sort of highfalutin and sort of, you know, well, rather dour, you know, like sort of hard to get on with and rather religious. And anyway, he seemed quite normal, quite natural. I felt quite happy with him, really. And anyway, we went along, and we went through what seemed to be a side turning, and then we bared to the right past a lot of poplar trees on each side of the road, very pretty. And I thought, these poplar trees, they remind me of something, I can't think of what, you know. And then all of a sudden it came to me, of course I remember, and I remember this road. It was exactly the same as the road in France when I was there in the 1418 war, these lovely big tall trees aside there. And I knew, without, before I even reached it, that the far end of this would be a very old house, and it would be full of people that I'd known. I don't know why I thought this, when after all it was all new experience, but if it was going to turn out like I thought it was going to be these people that were so nice to me when I was in France, when I was billeted. Anyway, it turned out that it was, and there was this mother and daughter there and the father, but they came and stood at the end of the road and at the edge of the gate there, looking over, waving like mad at me. And I thought to myself, well, I don't know, these people, I believe they must have been killed, because I'd heard a little later that this place had been absolutely bombed, you know, during the war, and I couldn't get this out of my mind. I thought, well, these people, I got a feeling that they were dead anyway. And I thought, well, I'm dead, and I'm supposed to be in a dead man's world, so these people must be dead. All this was going on in my mind, and then I looked at them in hard, you know, and I could see that the husband and the wife looked young. They were the same people, but they looked younger. Then my mind went to two pictures that they used to have over a sideboard. One was of her and one was of him when they were young. Ooh, I suppose they would have been then in their 20s. And they looked exactly like I looked in them, their two portraits that they had. She looked exactly the same, so did they. And the daughter, she looked as young as the mother. Mother, you know, she looked about the same age. Of course, this daughter I was very drawn and attached to. And actually, if things had gone right, I would, well, given the opportunity, I would have proposed to her, because I wasn't married then, you see. Mm-hmm. And I always think that, because I know now, but I always used to think when I was on earth, that's one other reason why perhaps my two marriages didn't work out. I always carried this girl's memory in my heart, you know. I always think what a nice little thing she was, and she was very sweet and kind, and I always felt she was the right one for me, although we could hardly speak a word of each other's lingo. I mean, but we seemed to get on. They were always very good to me. But I heard, as I told you, that the whole place around that area had been very badly bombed. And, you know, I think, I didn't know for sure, mind you, whether they'd been killed, and I realise now, of course, then, that they must have been. Anyway, they were chatting away. And the funny thing was, the first time in my life I could understand their lingo. You see, when on earth, I mean, I could, they spoke just a little bit of English, at least the old boy did, and the mother could say a few words, but here they were chatting away to me, or at least so it seemed to me, but I understood everything perfectly, and they were holding conversation, and I was holding conversation, and anyway, I got inside this place, and there it was exactly the same, the room was the same, the chairs, the sideboard was there, the two pictures was there, the lamp was standing on the side where I always remember it. Oh, it was, well, it was fantastic. And there I was. Well, I couldn't get over this. So this young fella said to me, well, now, he says, I'm going to leave you with your friends. He said, but I shall come back in a little while, and we will talk about what we're going to do and what you would like to do. After all, it's important that you should do what you want to do, not for me to say what you must do, because in any case, he says, I can't tell you what you must do. No one here evidently ever tells you what you've got to do. They may make suggestions and give you ideas, but everyone seems to be so free and easy and be able to do the things they want to do within reason. Same. And anyway, I was quite happy, I suppose, because now I realise that I was taken to these people because, well, he knew that I had this sort of deep regard and affection for the family and the girl, and I suppose he knew that I'd be happier with them. I realised since, of course, he was right. Anyway, I stayed with him, and yeah, it struck me as so odd, you know. And I always remember another thing. It was difficult, of course, at that time about food and one thing or the other one on earth, I mean. And they always used to make some soup. I don't quite know how they made it, because things were tough. But I suppose, of course, being farm and all that, or at least farm property, they all seemed to rake up something that perhaps you couldn't get anywhere else. Anyway, I don't know why, I didn't even want it, I suppose, in a way, and yet in a subconscious sort of way, I suppose, I sort of associated with them, and they said, oh, we've got something nice for you that you'll enjoy, and I thought, food, well, you don't eat food, do you? So they laughed, you know, and anyway, they put this big bowl of soup in front of me, and honestly, it's just as if I was on earth again, back in time, you know, and I was having this soup, and I enjoyed it. And the smoke too, the old boy had his pipe, because he was an old boy now, but it was just like old times, and yet there was a difference. Because this went on, I stayed there, I don't know how long, I had no idea of time with us. And then this fair boy came back again, he said, well, he said, how do you feel? So I said, I feel fine. I said, I never felt better. So I said to him, I said, what amazes me is that naturalness of everything, being able to eat and drink and smoke and all the rest of it. He looked at me and he laughed. He says, well, he said, that is only because you think, and other people like you think, those things are necessary. He says, but you'll soon realise they're not. And then when the desire goes, the thought force or whatever it is you call it, he says, will disappear with it, and those things will no longer exist for you. Things only exist for you until such time as you decide that they're not necessary. So he said, did you find your horse being cared for? Of course, they brought back my memory of that. I said, oh yes, I've been round, I've got a stable round the back, and the horse is well fed and well looked after, and he goes out in the fields every day. He says, he says, you're quite happy about that then. So he says, you're quite happy here. So I said, oh yes, I don't particularly want to move, I'm quite happy. I said, but I am a bit curious. So he says, what do you mean curious? About what? So I said, it's about my two wives, Emmy and Liz. So he says, oh, do you want to go and see them? So I says, well, we didn't get it off, you know. Liz had another bloke, you know. But I said, no, not really. So he says, I believe you would really like to know what's happened to them. So I says, well, yes and no, I don't want to meet them. So he says, you don't have to meet them if you don't want to. He says, but you can go and see them and they won't see you. I thought, well, this is a bit, you know, much. So he says, well, what do you want to do? He says, you're going to see them. So I says, all right. So, because I didn't know this either, because I lost touch. You know, I mean, I went my own way and they went off and had their own interests and affairs. And so I said, I don't know if they're dead or alive. He says, well, as a matter of fact, they're both alive, but they're both very old now. And one lives in the country and the other one lives in London. So I says, oh. So I said, I don't think I'll bother. So he says, look, he says, I think you should. So I says, why? I said, we never got on. I said, I don't really feel inclined. So he says, I think you should. He says, because one of them will be coming over here in a matter of, well, a very short time, and I think it'll be a help. I couldn't see how I could help her, because we never get it off at all. So anyway, cut a long story short. He said, I went with him. Now, it's funny that when you talk about going with someone from this side, because you don't get on a train, you don't get on a bus, you don't get no Green Line buses and that sort of luck, you know. So I said, well, how do we go? Oh, he says, we go. He says, just completely relax. He says, don't think of anything. Just completely relax. And just leave it to me. So I didn't quite know what to do. He says, oh, just close your eyes. Don't think of anything. And before I knew where I was, it was as if I was, I don't know, transported, I suppose, like in a pantomime, you know, they have these here transformation scenes. Anyway, cut a long story short, I found myself in an house in a, walking up a street, at least it seems as if I was walking up a street, a very old place, it was, a lot of houses all much the same. And I found myself in a room, real old fashioned, Victorian house it was. And there was my old girl lying on an arm bedstead. Oh, she didn't have like a sight. I suppose I shouldn't have thought this. I thought, my God, I've been spared or something. You know, I thought, well, that's wrong to think like that. But she never was all that good looking. But anyway, she looked ghastly. And I thought, oh, blimey. So this fella says, Michael, he says, you know, she's coming over here soon. So I said, you did tell me that. So he said, I don't think she'll recognise you, I don't think she'll see you. Because it's very rare, he says, that they do see us. They're completely sort of blind to us for some reason, he says, and partly due to the fact they just don't understand that there is a possibility of, you know, this sort of thing, communication and that. He says, but just stand at the foot of the bed, will you, and concentrate on her. So I said, well, why should I do that? I'm not all that interested. He said, look, he said, you've got to learn. He says that even though you don't get on with people, you don't love people particularly, that in some senses you have duty to perform and it'll help them. So I said, all right. So I stood as he said. And then all of a sudden I could see her sort of change colour, is any way I can put it. She seemed as if the colour came back to her cheeks and her eyes looked brighter. And she looked quite different. And I heard her call out my name, you see. It made me feel right funny inside, I tell you. I felt real jolly, you know, standing there like that. And anyway, she sort of put her hands out. And then all of a sudden, I could see that she'd changed, you know, something had happened. And there was a light round her, all bright light there was. And then I saw other people standing around, come in the room, stand around. Oh, and I could see one or two of these people that, although I wasn't exactly, you might say, exactly on the same wavelength or whatever you either call it with them, I could see them clearly enough and I recognised two of them as being her mother and father. And, oh, she seemed to float, as any way I can put it, as if she floated above her body. And came to a sort of, well, as if she sort of lifted herself up straight up. And I'm, matter of fact, it sounds stupid now, but I backed out of the way, thought she was going to fall right on top of me. And Michael whispered to me, he said, she's coming out of her body now, she's going to be all right. They're going to take her away. You see, that's her mother and father, and there's other people, her friends that have come to help. He said, I just wanted you to come because in the way you've helped her, you don't realise yet how much you've helped her. So I said, well, it's very odd. I said, she's all alone here. So he said, yes, she's only been living alone for many years, and there's no one bothers much about her. And the other people in the house don't even know she's in bed. They'll find her dead in bed probably sometime during the day or perhaps tomorrow. He said, well, that's not so important. It's to help her over a difficult time. She's had a rough time, you know, since you knew her. And the man she went to live with, he packed up and left. And while she'd gone from bad to worse, he says, she needs help. And although you don't realise it, she was very fond of you in a way. So I said, well, I wouldn't have thought so, the way she behaved. He said, no, you mustn't think like that. And oh, he's giving me advice, and he was doing this and doing that. Anyway, it was all very interesting. At the same time, I thought, well, perhaps I ought to try and do something, but what could I do? I mean, I was new myself to all this business. Anyway, he said, no, I want you to go and see your other wife. Oh, blimey, I said, must we? So he said, yes, come on. So the next thing I knew was that I was in some sort of a country pub, at least where it was a pub, all right, but like an inn or something, real old country place. And there she was, called, blimey, you'd have seen her. You'd have said to yourself, like I said inwardly, all of what I've been saved from, you know, she looked ghastly. Her hair was all dyed, proper colour. You know, her hair when she was young was a sort of auburn colour. Well, she'd obviously gone grey, and she dyed it a red colour called, blimey, she looked like a bloody scarecrow. She was sitting there knocking the gin back, you know. She looked a proper old so-and-so. He said, look at the state she's in. Then Michael said to me, we must try and help her. She's gone from bad to worse, and really she's in a shocking state. So I said, well, I don't know what we can do for her. I said, I really, quite frankly, I knew drink was going to be the ruination of her. She couldn't half knock him back. He said, well, yes, but even so, he says, we've got to try and help her. So I said, well, I don't know what I could do. I tried my best when I was on earth, but I couldn't stomach her for all that length of time. I had to do something. So he said, I'm not interested in the past. He says, well, I'm interested in the future. He says, we've got to try and save her, try and help her, you know. So I said, oh, well, I don't know, what can I do? He says, you can. So he says, what I want you to do is to stay with her. I said, well, you cannot get that, mate, you know, I don't stay with her. I'm happy where I am with my French friends, and, you know, I just don't want to come. He says, look, he says, I want you to do one thing for me. He says, I want you to stay with her for a few weeks. He says, and try and concentrate your thought that she will become different, that things will change, you know, that she will think differently and act differently. So I thought, well, this is a proper Charlie, you know, me. I said, no, I couldn't do that. He says, look, he says, admittedly, he says, it's no good you trying to do it if you don't want to. And if you have that negative, as he called it, thought, he says, no good will come of it. But you could help her because, well, probably you're the only person that can help her. He says, you haven't long been over here. You're still close enough to the earth to be able to really sort of tune in, as he called it, to her and help her with her thoughts. So I said, well, I don't know what I can do. He says, well, try it, mate, try it. So I thought, all right, I'll try it. Try it once, but I wasn't happy about it. I said, what about my French friends? I think I've deserted them. He says, they understand. They know. They know you're coming here to do a job. I said, me do a job? What with her? So he says, yes, you've got to do a job with her, because it's your duty. I said, duty? I ain't got no duty. He says, you'll find me a ham. Anyway, I stayed with her for about, well, I don't know, it's been some weeks. And I didn't like it at all. Night after night, sitting in this bar, she was knocking them back, picking up feathers. Not that anyone really had much to do with her. I mean, she was as ugly as I don't know what. She looked, I don't know, more white makeup and muck she got on, you know. But, I don't know, I didn't seem to be able to get anywhere with her at all at first. And then, one day, she thought she had a dream. And she thought she saw me in the dream. Actually, it was that she was able to leave her body. And I must say this, when she left her body, she did look different, thank God. And she tried to wait a minute. I'm getting lost now.
Come on, friend.
interesting.
That's interesting.
Yes, I'm sure. Yes, can you come up, please? Can you raise your face? Pity, because that was very interesting.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, yes. I hope she managed you. Yes, your friend? Wait a minute, friend.
Try and bring him back next time to continue.
Hello.
So sorry, Paul seems to have gone.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Marshall.
I'm so sorry about
this. It's quite all right, Dr. Marshall.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, friend.
Oh, you're not.
Thank you.